Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Yes. So you're doing one of the things when we do these shows is we get talking ahead of time and we start talking about stuff that should be in the show. So I cut you off so we could record the story. We're recording Tuesday. So you're doing Stitch in Public tonight?
Yes, for our local chapter, the Blue Ribbon chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. We've been once a month, three of us usually, stitch at a library. And we switch between Coralville and North Liberty. So they're right next to each other, right next to Iowa City. We haven't done Iowa City because it's downtown and it's hard to get down there and park. But so we stitch in the evening or on a weekend when hopefully there will be adults in the library.
And
all we're doing is we're not trying to grab people and say, come over and look at what we're doing. We're just, sitting and stitching and chatting. And if people come by, we show them what we're doing and tell them, a little bit about the guild what we do. And, two or three hours our chapter does that in several locations. We have a lot of members up in Cedar Rapids, which is 20 miles north of where I live. And so they do Stitch in Publics at the Cedar Rapids Library and at a craft store and the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library.
So
we're getting out into the community, to kind of try to get the word out that we're here. And
yeah. So, all right. So what's that like? Cause see that I didn't realize that you had that much going on. So what's that like? Is it like, if you go to the library, when you go to the library tonight, you just grab a big table and sit around it, or do you try to be visible, or you just find a place out of the way? How do you go about it?
Oh, we sit right in the middle.
Oh, okay.
So the Coralville Library has a long main aisle that has big tables in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got pretty good lighting. The North Liberty Library has a seating area kind of right across the aisle from the checkout desk. Up at the Cedar Rapids Library, we sit in their, they have a cafe in the library, and it's in right on the main, right in the main area where people walk through.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we pick an area that's got where people are going to walk by, because that's what we want. We want to engage them in conversation. If they kind of slow down and look at what we're doing and act like they're interested, then one of us will ask them if they stitch, and some of them will say, "Oh, I used to do cross stitch,
yeah,
but I can't see anymore."
Oh, yeah, that.
Not familiar? Yeah.
Send Rinda. Ever talk to him. Yeah. So it's really just a visibility thing. And if there's interest, you share. If not, you just go about your business.
Right. And I have a notebook for people to put their email and address and name down if they're interested in getting the newsletter.
Oh, okay.
So, we have quite a few people on that email list, and I don't know that we've gotten any members out of it, but you never know. You have to, kind of keep.
Yeah.
Keep reminding people about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You never know when someone's life changes and they have an opportunity. You just don't know. Yeah. So it really, it literally is just being visible and making sure that you at least have a contact if somebody is at all interested, but otherwise it's just something that people see and either walk by or at least stop and look over your shoulder. But basically really low key, but you just keep doing it enough and it's, you never know who you'll get. Yeah.
And plus that, we're stitching.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty neat, you know, because I think sometimes, you know, you'll see, especially smaller chapters, you know, what are we going to do for a program, or what are we going to do for activities other than have a meeting? And, you know, what are the things that someone might do? And that's certainly an activity you could have on a regular basis that is no cost, just a matter of people showing up. And people always like to get together and stitch with friends, so why not do it at the library or, wherever,
Right. Yeah. So that's, you know, we've gone to the mall, one or the other of the malls around here from time to time. You know, there's lots of places you can do it.
Yeah.
It just is a matter of getting people kind of organized to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but it's something that any guild can do, no matter what your size.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, have a good time. I'm sure you will.
I'm sure I will. Yes.
All right. Let's see the business end of things here. No stitch hour tonight because we're doing this. Yep. And then next Wednesday will be the rescheduled visit with Jane Garrison of Painter's Threads. And for those who missed out on the train wreck of a Wednesday show last week, Jane did not join us as planned because when she was testing with her daughter, she discovered that the bandwidth she was supposed to be getting from AT&T was not the bandwidth she was actually getting, and she wasn't getting enough to do video anything. So that set off the usual series of events where you try to get AT&T to come out and fix the problem. Well, they couldn't get there soon enough. So we delayed till the 13th to have Jane come and talk about Painter's Threads. And it was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that we did the Sunday show with Jane Garrison of Painter's Threads. So go listen to that before next Wednesday. But then in the interim, I got to thinking out loud and sent her an email and wondered about if we could put together some kind of a package that would be affordable, for lack of a better word, of Painter's Threads that people might buy to at least give them a try.
Oh, nice.
I thought, you know, we talk about them because they're the kind of threads that you just want to have because they'll fit in anywhere. And, right. You know, you might add a little pizzazz to a design. And if you have Painter's Threads handy, then you could. So she was more than agreeable to doing that. So that was the other thing was, all right, well, we're delayed. That gives her more time to put that together and check her inventory and see what she has and so on and so forth. So that's the plan, is next Wednesday we'll show and talk about how these threads are used in designs, and then we'll have a package of threads that you can buy from Jane's website that will at least give you a sampling of what they have. And reason, you know, the idea came from, she sent Beth and me a collection of threads so we could see what they were like firsthand. And it was like, holy smokes, you know, people should have these in their stash. And so it was, all right, we got to make a way for people to at least get a little taste of them. So that's part of the show next Wednesday. So,
yeah, I won't need that.
No. You're covered.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate to say that, but the needlework store that we go to, that is our quote unquote local needlework store up in Waverly, Iowa, doesn't carry the Painter's Threads, but Needlepoint painted canvas stores do.
Oh.
And there's one that we go to over in Naperville, Stitcher's Garden, and she's carried them for quite a while. So I have some of the shimmer.
You've obtained some.
I have obtained some for my inventory. Well, and then through Cyber Pointers, we are stitching Debbie Rowley's Mermaid's Tale.
Oh.
And that's all she used in that.
Oh.
There might be some DMC in there. I don't remember. I haven't looked at it because I don't know where it is. It's in a box somewhere. but she even has some of the GIMP and the, I don't know what it's called. Debbie couched some of the coiled trim on as seaweed.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, there's several different kinds of the painter's thread in that kit. All in blues. You would love it.
Well, I do love that design. I've seen that design. Well, I saw it when it was first, I think it was in Chicago at the EGA National Seminar. And I couldn't believe it was Debbie's because it's so different for her. Mm-hmm. But it's a terrific design. It really is.
Yeah, I am looking forward to getting started on it, but I need to find it.
Yeah, that'd be a good start. Well, yeah, and you just moved, so good luck to you.
Yeah, well, I'm making progress. I've got a big pile of empty boxes in my studio.
Okay.
But I haven't gotten to the box that had that in it yet.
Yeah, I've seen your movie, so okay, I'm cheering for you from St. Louis. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Been there, done that?
Yep, on your side, but unable to participate. Sorry. So Jane will be with us next Wednesday. Now, if you were attempting to listen to the show this past Wednesday, thanks to those who hung in there, but it was a technical train wreck. And we had just all kinds of problems. And right after the show, I did a lot of research. It was a long night. And picked up a piece of equipment that I think has solved the problem. We've done a couple of extended tests and solved the problem. And it's performed flawlessly since then. So I hope so, because it cost enough. But just can't have another show like that. And the other part that came out of it is the software we use for the live shows, a recent huge upgrade to that. And one of the benefits was it allows you to send the signal for the show to multiple destinations, where up till now it's just been Facebook or YouTube for us. Well, now, and this was one of the things we tested, now next Wednesday we'll be sending the show live to Facebook and YouTube, so two places. So if YouTube is not your thing and you're more comfortable at Facebook, as long as you like or follow the Fiber Talk page, you'll be able to get it on Facebook too. So that'll be good, I think.
Yeah. Reach more people.
I hope so. But, a good thing. Well, two good things came out of it. One, I think we solved the problem, and the other is another channel to find it on. So join us either way, Facebook or YouTube, next Wednesday, 8 o'clock Eastern Time with Jane Garrison, and that'll be fun. Yep.
Yeah.
September 10, that's this Sunday, Lucy Newman of LJN Studio. She's in England. She will be our guest and really a creative embroiderer, artist. Her latest project has been, and this is what caught my eye when, I got to talk to this lady. She was imagining what plants and flowers would be like after, say, a nuclear holocaust or some disaster, some global disaster, and how it would mutate the plants and what they would look
really
like.
Really cool.
Yeah. And so she's done a series of designs. That's just her latest project. Believe me, she has plenty of other things, but most fascinating. So we talk with Lucy on Sunday, and that was good. Yeah. She was fun. So look for that. And no matter what you do, go back to this past Sunday and listen to the show on vision.
Yes.
That worked out a whole lot better than I thought it was going to. That was a terrific show. Really great. Yeah.
It was.
We talk about, we spent a lot of time talking with Rinda Just. It was Rinda Just and Kelly Lee Teske were our guests. Kelly is an optician, and Rinda is a stitcher, former lawyer, who has macular degeneration. It's something that Marga's mother had and her aunt had, and it's not an uncommon thing, unfortunately, and it's essentially incurable, barely preventable. And but Rinda has determined that she was not going to let it stop her from stitching. And so she has made the accommodations so she can continue to stitch. And so we talk about that and what that means. And we talk about, you know, the vitamins you can take in younger years to, and should be taking all the time to help prevent it. And then Kelly, as an optician, talks about all kinds of things. She has a large floater and dry eyes, but she talks about glasses, and we talk about sunglasses and all the things that are affect, help, improve, hurt your vision beyond just having a good magnifier and a lamp when you stitch. Mm-hmm. And it's a long show because we had a lot to cover and I wasn't going to cut anything out. But really, really happy with the end result, really proud of it, and really huge thanks to Cyber Pointers for sponsoring it, and Sassy Jacks along with that, but also to Rinda and Kelly for offering all kinds of information. And Rinda is so open about her macular degeneration and sharing what her experiences are so others will know. I really admired that. I was initially kind of hesitant to ask questions because, you know, I mean, that's got to be just difficult. And, I didn't want to put her in a spot, but nope, she was all for it. So it was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Mom had macular degeneration too. And whenever people say, oh, I quit doing it because I can't see it, I'd tell them, yeah, my mother has macular degeneration and she's 91 years old and she still stitches every day.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It really comes down to whether or not it's something that's really important to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does.
If it's something that's really important to you, you'll make accommodations, whatever you need to do, you know, whether it's extra lights, like Rinda said, or special glasses or whatever it is, you'll figure out a way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a good show. One thing I learned that is now I'm going to act on it is Kelly was talking about how lined bifocals or trifocals for needlework and other close-up work are better than continuous.
I agree with that 100%.
Now, do you have lined ones?
No, I do not.
Oh.
But as a consequence, I rarely wear my regular glasses when I'm reading.
Oh.
Because I find myself having to move my head to get the bifocal in the right spot and it was worse when the fashion was for the little skinny glasses.
Yeah.
You know, it just seemed like the sweet spot was really hard to find. So my eyes aren't very bad. And so, you know, I think I've got readers that are twos now.
Mm-hmm.
But I've used magnifying for stitching forever. And there I don't have a problem with my regular glasses.
Yeah. Well, she really caught my ear with that one because I have, my lenses are not very, they're fairly narrow, medium, I guess. But I have continuous, and I probably don't even realize how much I adjust my head.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I, you know, learned from the eye doctor here just a month or so ago that my lenses weren't made correctly. Oh, great. Glad I paid top dollar for those, you know. But but then Kelly was suggesting that for stitching and other close-up work that I get lined trifocals, because they're a lot less expensive and they'll do better.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give that some serious look. I'm thinking about continuous for everyday use, and then get line trifocals or probably bifocals, because my distance vision is quite good. But get that so that I have more magnified space on the bottom half of the lens. So that opened my eyes. I was all right. Check that out. So
I hadn't really thought about doing that. My Craft Optics have a regular bifocal in them, not a continuous. I don't wear, I mean, it's, you know, I do get up and walk around sometimes when I've got them, when I'm wearing them, but I don't look out of the bottom.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest thing with a regular bifocal, I think, is just getting used to where you have to look.
Yeah.
As you move around.
Right. Well, I mean, I use a magnifier and have for, you know, as long as I can remember, but I think I'm going to look into it. And the other thing was that I took out of that, other than just learning a whole lot about eyes, was to feel emboldened to take your stitching in to the eye doctor and say, this is what I do for a lot of hours. I need glasses that are going to help me do this.
Yep.
And basically, if your doctor won't help you, find another doctor. I kind of was like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, one of our friends has never been able to really use magnification for stitching. Something about her eyes, it just doesn't work for her. So she did exactly that. She took her needlework into her eye doctor, and they worked out a prescription for her for stitching. So she has her stitching glasses.
Ah.
And then she has her regular glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they work great for her.
Yeah, and you think, oh, you know, buy a special pair of glasses for stitching. Well, how many hours of it do you do? And it's your enjoyment. So it's, you know, make it as pleasant as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and like Rinda said, you know, she said that she can't see her work well enough to judge her how well she's doing.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another thing, you know, you need good eyesight to judge that you're doing the best work that you can do.
Right. Right.
You know, whether it's laying threads or making sure you're getting it in the needle in the right hole, or, you know, whatever it is, if you don't have good enough vision, you're going to struggle with that.
Right. Yeah. Invest in it. And, you know, it's your eyes, for crying out loud. Take care of them. Yeah.
Right.
So that's at the risk of redoing the whole show. That was go listen to last Sunday's show. You know, put it on while you're stitching. It's pretty cool what we talked about. I really was, it was one of those where I wanted to just listen to those two instead of doing my job. And it was, it's a good one. So, do check that out. Yep. Let's see, plug for Kim at Sassy Jacks. The September soiree is September 15 to 18. That's all online. Somebody wrote on the Sassy Jacks page, you know, do you do online stuff? Well, 15 to 18 is all online. Now, it might be too late because it is September 5, 6. But call Kim at the shop and see if you can get in on it. I know there's swag bags that go with it, and she may not be able to get that together for you. But the soiree is the 15th to 18th, and Beth's done it at least twice and really enjoyed it. So I wanted to do it this year, but I can't. I got other stuff in the way. I always have stuff in the way. So anyway, check that out. But call the shop, because it may be too late. But if you want to do something online, Kim's got quite a little program lined up. And then October 3 to 8 is the Jackie DePlessis workshops. There's four of them. You can find out all that on the Sassy Jacks Facebook page. So check that out. Don't miss those. Those are pretty cool. And those are live. You travel to North Carolina for those. So, yeah. And then EGA, now they've been doing a FiberTalk 5. So FiberTalk and the number 5, all one word, to get $5 off of one of their lectures, their virtual lectures, which are excellent. Every one of them has been excellent. And that was a once a month thing, and then they didn't do it, and then now they've just made it a permanent thing. So you can sign up FiberTalk 5 now. Here we are, second week, and I didn't think to check. I don't know if you can do it continuously, or if you do it once and then there's a check mark next to your name and you aren't allowed to do it again. But regardless, FiberTalk 5 gets you at least one virtual lecture for free. And they're only $5 anyway, so check that out. But use that FiberTalk 5, and you can do it on recorded or upcoming ones. It doesn't matter. Check that out, and I will just reiterate to the EGA people, give us an annual cost so we can just sign up for all of them. I'm all in.
I think that's a great idea, but you do have to be an EGA member.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Which, why not, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Yep. So, yeah, you have to be, but you should be. Yeah, that's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the Sarah Parr sampler. I forget.
Yes.
I think it was Kathy Renard, but I may be wrong. Somebody in a live show a couple times ago suggested that I get to work on Sarah Parr and get it finished, because I'm close, so that I can give it to our daughter on her birthday.
Uh-huh.
And her birthday is the end of October. And so I thought, hey, I can do that.
You can do that.
And so I've been plugging away at it. And last night I got to putting the border in across the bottom. It's like, yes.
Uh-huh.
Because I just do the borders as we go.
Yeah.
So all right, I'm going to finish the border off. Okay. And I'd done some preliminary counting to make sure I wasn't going to have trouble somewhere. So I finished the border off, and I get to where it meets. So I'd gone in maybe 30 stitches from the left. And then I went over to the right, where I was still some of the right side, brought that down, came across the bottom, got all the way over to where they meet up. Cindy, I was a half a stitch off. A half a stitch. I couldn't believe it. I thought I had it. You know, I was checking as I go so I wouldn't be 3 stitches off or some weird thing. Half a stitch off. I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, no way I'm going back. I mean, it's a big sampler. No way I'm going back and finding that. You know, that ain't happening at all for a half a stitch. And it was probably one of those really thin linen threads, you know, that I didn't see and stitched right over.
Yep.
So I finished it. I fixed it so you really can't see it. But 2/3 of the bottom are a half a stitch higher than the other. Okay, so, you know, the perfectionist in me, that kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
So then I overnight, I had an idea. I woke up this morning. All right, I know where I can add that half a stitch, and you really won't see it off on the right side. And move everything down the half a stitch. And mm-hmm. So I have to tear out the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to tear it out. And then it'll be the full stitch between the motif and the border that it's supposed to be. And there'll be this little half stitch over on the side that you really won't. You'll have to hunt for it.
It'll blend into the border. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I am going to tear all that out because I got to have that bottom because visually, you know, it's just a hair off. And I can, you know how you get that feeling when you get to a point where you see the end and mm-hmm. you get, you know, juiced up to, all right, I'm charging through this thing. I got that feeling. Yep. I got that feeling last night. Ooh, I can, yeah, pounding through it. Everything else moved aside. I'm doing this thing. So, yep. So my unofficial sampler September piece, I'll probably get it done in September, I'm guessing. Yep. Yep.
Great.
Yeah. So that was fun.
That's fantastic.
Even if I do have to tear out a bunch of stitching, I don't care. Worth it.
Well, it's not like you haven't done that before.
Yeah, exactly. Many times. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I'm at. And I was going to ask you if you do a sampler September item, but I'm going to guess not. So
no,
you probably have a needlepoint September item, but
I've just been working on, you know, something. I really haven't been doing much stitching because moving.
Right.
But I do have a little project.
That'll wreck everything, won't it?
Yeah. That I'm working on when we do the stitch in Publix. That's a little needlepoint thing.
Uh huh.
That, you know, is something that's easy to carry around and I don't need a whole lot of threads and I is big enough that I can see it without, you know, magnification and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
you know, I'll get there. It's just like we said before, it's a process. It takes a while to get everything out and organized. And
Yep. Yeah. The only thing you can do is keep plugging away at it.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm making progress.
Now, I've been meaning to ask you, are you setting up a room for stitching or just a place to store stuff? What is your, because you got pretty much a blank slate when you moved in, right?
Yes. The master bedroom is my studio.
All right. Well, closet, well played.
The walk-in closet is the storage area.
Excellent.
All the threads and everything will go in there.
Excellent. Well played. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't need a big bedroom.
but you do need a big room for needlework. So yeah.
Right. So I've got my desk in here. I've got some bookcases, and my sewing machine will go in here. It needs to have some refurbishment done to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put another table and a tabletop on top of some filing cabinets. So filing cabinet storage and then the tabletop for, you know, spreading fabric out and cutting it and whatever.
Yep. Excellent.
So well yeah, making progress. Yeah.
Yeah. Having a table to spread stuff out on that. When I set up my room, probably the smartest thing I did was just surface area. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have a big desk, and I could use that, but that would, I'd probably have to move stuff around.
Right.
You know, if I wanted to cut fabric, and I don't really want to mess with that. I just want the desk for all my dusky stuff.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's, the table I set up, that I keep it clean. It's empty right now. It's so nice to just, I need a space, and you don't have to move half the things, and you just have a space. And
yeah.
Yep.
If you're working on picking threads for a project, you know, you can kind of spread out your color card and
yep.
You have your threads that you're going to use and
yep.
Yeah.
Worth it. If you have the room.
It would be that or the dining room table.
Yeah.
Which I could certainly do because I'm the only one here.
Right.
But then I'd have to take everything out to the dining room.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so nice to have it right in the spot. Yep.
Yeah. And I will have a chair in here to sit and stitch and my magnifying lamp. Then I will also stitch out in the living room probably with my craft optics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so once again, the whole house is for stitching.
Why not?
Right.
Yep. Why not? Yep. So, well, that's cool. Yeah. And a walk-in closet to store everything. Ooh.
Yeah.
Please tell me it's not full before you even start.
Well, it is full right now because I've kind of moved things piecemeal, and everything that I had moved into this room got shoved in the closet.
Yep.
When I had the place painted.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get it all out of the way. So right now, I can open the door and things don't fall out, but you can't really walk into it. I have to move things out to get in, but everything that's in there is needlework related. So once I get the table that I can pull stuff out and, you know, start staging things on the table, then I can organize that.
Yeah.
That'll be the last thing I do.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Yep.
Yeah.
Having space like that. Yep. It's a real luxury, but it's nice.
Yeah, it really is.
Yep. Yep. Interesting thing. Yvette Stanton, when we talked with Yvette a month ago or so, she was on the list to have classes at the upcoming World Needlework Convention in London. And her classes got canceled, didn't have enough registrants, got canceled. And so she posted about it, and she called it her own mental pity party, but
I saw that.
But it was an interesting thing because it was her kind of her feeling at her lowest moment, I'm sure, that one of the reasons she did not draw people was because she doesn't have any formal training, i.e. she's not a graduate of the Royal School or some equivalent. And of course, is Yvette Stanton an expert in white work of all kinds?
Yes.
Yes. Probably one of the leading experts in the world. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of caught my eye that she would think that's a factor, because it shouldn't be a factor at all.
No.
And then I started mentally going through how many people in different stitching techniques do we know who are very good, very talented, known to be excellent teachers, and are pretty much self-taught. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't think anything of it. So why would that even come up? I mean, the fact that it's in London and, you know, the Royal School and everything, I suppose, becomes a factor. But, she seems to have gotten past it. But it wouldn't enter my mind that, you know, well, she doesn't have formal training. I'm not taking a class from her. I wouldn't even think about it. I'd look at her work.
I wouldn't either. Yeah. It would never even occur to me.
Yeah.
That it would be a criteria that, you know, whether or not I would. Well, she was chosen to be on the faculty.
Right.
It's just, so, you know, there is that. She made it past that hurdle.
Right.
So they obviously didn't care whether or not she had something from the RSN.
Right. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, it probably was, maybe it was that people, I don't know, you know, I didn't look to see what other offerings they had, but maybe people just didn't look at it closely enough to see how cool they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because with white work, you really have to look at it.
Yeah.
Or you already have to be, I love white work, I'm going to take anything that's white work. Or you have to be able to look at it and really understand. Well, the other thing is, you know, if there's cut work involved, that scares the heck out of people.
Yes, it does. Yep.
So that would be my thinking. That would be where I would go before I'd go to, well, I don't have a degree from the RSN.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that she felt that way. And I, you know, I was kind of like, well, I hope this doesn't happen very very much, because, and you know, and the fact that it's in Europe, which, I mean, white work is a very niche technique. I mean, first you have to be aware of it and then like it. Mm-hmm. And as many different things, white work techniques as there are, you know, just look at her books.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's not, if you, all you do is cross stitch or needlepoint, it isn't going to cross your path.
Right.
But in Europe, I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of countries in Europe where white work was and or is a significant technique. And so you'd think that there would be interest there. But
right.
Yeah, I just thought it was too bad that even entered her mind as a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. But
but as she said, people buy her books. So
right. Right. There. Yeah, she's got one coming up. But, you know, that's the other thing. I've got a handful of her books and have never stitched a thing out of them, but have used them as references many times.
Right.
Because they're absolutely excellent. I mean, her books are, I'm sure, a reflection of her teaching, which has got to be superb.
Yeah.
And to own her books, I mean, everything is just beautifully laid out and explained, and they're very, you know, top quality books. I mean, they're the kind of thing you'd expect if you bought a needlework book.
And, right.
So yeah, and that's all. Yeah, you know, that's all I need if I'm going to take a class from someone. You show me a book like that, and I'm in. Yeah. So I don't know. It just was kind of sad if that, in fact, was a factor in her not getting people in her classes. But
right.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Overrated, underrated.
Okay.
Laying tools.
Underrated.
Yes. Agreed.
And I think there's two things about that. One is people don't use them. And two is they don't know how to use them correctly. Mm-hmm. Well, I shouldn't say that because I think the way that I use it is correct. But
yeah, I'm sure everyone has their approach.
Right. So what I mean by correctly is that I use the laying tool to hold tension on the threads as I bring them up through the ground cloth and then also down through the ground cloth. So I kind of hold them with the laying tool right from as soon as I get the thread up high enough so that I've got some tension on it, I hold that with the laying tool. And then the thread goes over and down. And so I'm kind of pushing against the fabric
mm-hmm.
with my laying tool so that I've got tension on those threads that have come up through, especially if I've already kind of got them in order. I don't want them to get twisted.
Yep.
And then pull it down and holding that tension all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm way underrated. For very much the same reason, when I'm doing any kind of needlepoint, which is primarily Conda canvas, I have one in my hand all the time.
Yeah.
Because I just like you, I am forever using it to maintain tension, or if I'm doing one of those, you know, Jessica or Walnetto or something, to hold things in place so they don't slip back.
Right. Especially if you're using like a Krynek braid.
Yeah.
Or a ribbon, yep. Neon rays or something, or even, you know, six strands of thread.
Yeah, even that. Yep. Yep. Because people think about them as, well, that's just something I would use as if I am doing satin stitch. And yeah, that would be one use, but
right,
not by a long shot all the uses. Yeah.
No.
No, I have I have the Jacobari. How do we say that?
Jacobari.
Yeah, the long metal one. That's that to me that's essential tool. But then
I like a wooden laying tool better.
Yeah.
Because with my Jacobari or anything that's really sharply pointed, I tend to snag other threads with it.
Mm-hmm.
With the wooden laying tools that aren't quite as pointy, I do better.
Yeah, we should get in the same room because I have the Jacobari, which I use quite a bit. But then I have two wooden ones. One is a small wooden one, like it's 3 inches long.
Yep.
And I use that a lot, particularly for that same reason. If there's potential that sharp thing will snag threads, I go to the wood laying tool and use that because it's much gentler on the threads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, crazy. Last night I had to start a new skein of silk. And it's that Krynek Silk Mori.
That never, you love?
Never again, ever. But it was, you know, the skein was knotted where the two ends came together.
Mm-hmm.
Wooden laying tool, stuck it in there, undid the knot, didn't snag up the silk.
Right.
And off I was, you know, off and running, cutting the lengths. But, I think people don't appreciate what those are.
You can use it to open up a hole if you're doing eyelets.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can use it to open the hole up, you know, whether you're on linen or on needlepoint canvas, just, you know, poke it through there to open that hole up a little bit.
Yep.
I use mine to open up knots on, you know, watercolors and other kinds of threads that come that way. It's a good tool to use.
Yep. Yeah, I think everyone should have them. I don't care what you use, even if you just do cross stitch, you know, because there if you're doing two or three strands, and you're laying the top, you know, you're railroading or laying the top thing, that comes in handy for that. Yeah, too many ways to use it. Everybody should have at least one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a trolley needle or
mm-hmm.
you know, something that you hold. You know, there's any number of them. They come in all different kinds of materials and sizes and lengths, and
yep.
you can find something that works for you.
Yeah, I bought one of those. Go ahead.
Oh, you can use an awl, AWL.
Yep.
That you can get one at Joann's. Actually, I kind of like those. They have a nice handle on them, but they are pointy and sharp too. So I'm careful with that. Mm-hmm. When I first started learning how to do that, I used a big needle.
Yeah.
And I used the eye end of the needle,
mm-hmm.
not the pointy end of the needle. Mm-hmm. I've heard people use collar stays.
Yeah.
Which most people probably don't know what those are anymore, but you can get them at the needlework at the big box sewing stores.
Yep. Small knitting needles.
Small knitting needles. Yep.
Yep. Those will work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went crazy one time and bought one of those African porcupine quill laying tools.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool thing. I don't like it, but it's a cool thing.
Well, and you know, this is part of the problem of buying stuff online. You never really know what's going to work for you, but it's cool.
Yeah.
And do you display it?
Nah, it's just stuck in a jar with my scissors and other things. It has a plus in that it's flexible. Okay. Oh. So sometimes that's a plus, but it's too long. I don't like long laying tools. It's like this big thing I have to manipulate, and it's like, forget it. I just showed it. I will offer a tip on laying tools, though, if you have more than one, and that is to buy a length of airline tubing for aquariums. Just go to a pet store and just buy a foot. It'll cost you probably 10 cents. And then cut off pieces and slip those over the ends of your laying tools, then the point won't get damaged.
Right.
Yeah. That would be a tip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and most laying tools seem to be round, which means they'll roll.
Yeah.
And they always land point first.
Every time.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So if you can figure out a way to, or someplace to put it so it's not going to roll off the table or whatever your working surface is, that's always a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, they're like if you put peanut butter or jelly on a piece of bread and drop it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Yep. Face down. Yep.
Every time. Yeah.
Every.
Law of averages says it'll be 50-50, but nah. No, I guess every time. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, all right, laying tools, way underrated. Okay, now this one was kind of a This might just be one of my quirks. Tweezers.
No, I'm kind of, you know, middle of the road on those. I do use them.
Okay.
When I've had to cut something out, cut threads out, I will use them to pull the threads out.
Okay.
But that's probably about the only time I do use them.
That's about it, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use mine quite a bit. Somebody was many years ago on a live show, and I should remember the person, but she was kind enough to send me as a gift a pair of Dovo tweezers. Mm-hmm. Can believe that. The Dovo once made tweezers, but you know, they're beautiful. But I use them quite a bit. Like even if I'm cutting off just a regular thread, I'll grab it more often than not with the tweezer than my fingers before, you know, to hold it up so I cut it. I don't know why, but they're handy to have around, a good pair of tweezers.
Well, and if you're doing cut work, hardanger or white work, you know, where you're cutting threads and withdrawing them, then a good pair of tweezers is really, really invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, it's one more tool to have in the old weapon box there. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now this one came up because it's cross-stitch charts that are printed in color. Mm-hmm. And somebody posted on one of the Facebook forums that she preferred cross-stitch charts that were in color, and she was working on a piece that was a black and white chart. And so she wondered what people use to color their charts. And my initial reaction was, and my, not initial, but always, is I just don't care for the colored charts. I'd rather have it just be black and white.
Me too, 100%.
Okay.
And part of that is because I mark off the stitches as I do them.
Yes.
And if your chart is colored, then, you know, the average highlighter or colored pencil is not going to show up.
Yep.
You almost have to use black.
Yeah.
And then you can't, you know, if for some reason you have to go back, you know, take something out, then you've covered it up and it's black and you can't see it.
Yeah.
I've never really liked the colored charts.
Yeah, I never have either. The color, yeah, it just gets in the way visually to me. And I do too. I mark off as I finish. I mark them off. And color over color or whatever, because I use those Crayola retractable crayon things. And I bought them. Karen Kluba suggested those, and I bought them. And I thought, oh, I have all the colors here. I can mark off a section in the kind of the color that it is. Nah, I just take one. I just use one and just mark them off. It was just whatever. But I don't like when they're colored in. I don't like what happens when you blow them up so you can see them.
Right.
It drives me nuts. So.
So some of it might be what you started with.
Mm-hmm.
And color charts weren't available when we started doing cross stitch. It was all black and white.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you started with a colored chart as you were learning, that might be easier for you just because that's what you're used to.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. Well, for us who've been doing it for a while and didn't know anything at the beginning, way overrated.
Right.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yep. All right. Adjustable stretcher bars.
Underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I love my Evertights and the other ones, too, that I forget what they're called.
Adjust-a-frame?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't bought any from the new guy.
I haven't either. No. Excellent. The older Gary Kaufman was the guy. Excellent. Yeah. No, obviously people have done it with conventional stretcher bars for decades, but when they're adjustable like that and you can get your canvas as tight as you want it and keep it that way. I don't know why you go back to old conventional ones. I threw all mine away, my old ones. I just got rid of them.
I still have mine and I use them, but because I have so many of them and I didn't want to buy all new ones. But I do, if I know I'm going to be working on a project for quite a while, if it's a bigger project, I'll use the adjustable ones because of the fact that if the canvas stretches or it loosens up a little bit, I don't have to take it off and restretch it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I am kind of lazy about that.
I hate doing that.
I do too.
Yeah. It's just a pain in the butt. You know, that's time you could be actually working on the project and you got to take it off and, you know, I don't know, 20% of the tacks break and,
yeah.
You know, and another 10% are bent. And you stretch it back and you get all this monkeying around where with the adjustable ones, you just tighten the screw a little bit and off you go. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And folks use lots of tacks when,
uh-huh.
When you mount those things, use a lot of tacks. It's worth it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're using regular stretcher bars, it's going to hold it longer. It won't loosen up.
Yep.
As rapidly as if you're just using a few tacks, which, you know, when I started, I didn't know any better. I probably didn't use as many tacks as I should have, but I don't think you can use too many tacks.
I don't either. I'm like you. I'd put in maybe on a 10-inch side, I'd put in half dozen or eight tacks.
Yeah.
Then I'm sure it was Debbie Raleigh.
Probably.
Yeah, because she is an advocate of lots of tacks, but yeah, I mean, she'll put them almost next to each other.
Uh-huh.
But they hold, you know, she's right. I mean, it does not give.
Right.
It's worth it, yeah. Work from the center out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Side. Yep.
Yeah, I think adjustable stretcher bars, I would suggest that once you try a set, you don't care to go back.
Yeah. And I think you've said this before, maybe I heard it someplace else, the stretcher bars are going to be usable forever.
Mm-hmm.
I've maybe broken one or two in all the years I've been doing this and they weren't well made. Now I'm not talking about the adjustable ones. I'm talking about just plain old ordinary stretcher bars.
Yeah.
You know, it's inexpensive wood. You know, they're not finished really nicely.
Right.
But you could put tacks in them, you know, and I don't think I could ever use up all the potential tack holes on a pair.
No.
Because you got two sides.
Right. That's the other part. Yeah. Flip it over. If you got too many holes on one side, flip it over. You got a fresh start. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, you spend a little extra money for adjustable stretcher bars. The wood's a little better. It's a little better quality wood. They're finished better. And you've got, because they're a little bigger, you've got a lot more space to put tacks in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there's, I've seen posts where the perception is that you buy a set of stretcher bars and then once you're done with that project, then they're done.
Yeah. And, no.
No. They're like scroll frames or embroidery hoops. You buy one and you just use it till it completely falls apart in your hands.
Yep.
Which is going to be a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep. So, all right. Underrated adjustable stretcher bars. Okay. All right. That's going to be it.
Okay.
That's all we got. Well, we got more, but, you know, time.
We're running out of time.
Time. All right. So Sunday is going to be Lucy Newman. And then next Wednesday, be sure to join us on YouTube or Facebook, either one, for Jane Garrison, Painter's Threads. You're going to want to see that one because that is that's a line of threads that you want to get your little hands on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think that's it. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.